So I wanted to just give you a few points about Twin Peaks, get it on the record, and then we can go into it later. In the last two episodes, there was all kinds of references to Iondom. So I want to highlight a couple of points here. First off, when Cooper is escaping the Black Lodge, where he first goes is a place called the Mauve or Purple Zone. So he goes to Purple. So Ion is escaping the Gufferall, so he ends up talking to Purple. All right? That's an interesting parallel. Mm-hmm. And then Carol's nurse was Judy, and in the last episodes, we find out there's this ancient evil spirit called Jowday, which they then make Judy. So Judy was a very interesting person in Carolyn's practice, and Carolyn reunited with her during the Twin Peaks, you know, a month or so ago. So this Judy factor, I won't go into it. I have to ask Carolyn, what can we talk about Judy? But now here's what happens at 13:10 of the first hour, the bad Coop is brought into the White Lodge, and he's in a cage, and they're going to place him in Twin Peaks. So they're looking at Laura Palmer's house, and then the image shifts to another place where he's going to be, which is the Twin Peaks Sheriff Department. Well, when it shifts, what the screen shows us is the bands of pastel that Ion showed us when we were doing the hologram of Ion.
Wow.
Literally, I can now tell you where you can see the bands.
What? You must have had shivers there, Bob.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a beastie. Beastie Bob. I scare you. Hey, there's danger to humanity.
Even me, Bob. Don't you worry. Not me.
but the thing is, he is looking at one scene in Twin Peaks, and then he shifted to another scene. So in general, he's going at one angle, one world, and then he shifted to another world. And Lynch has the uncanny accuracy of showing the bands of pastel, which Ion said are the links between two worlds. Not my world and their world, but just two worlds. You're in a third position looking at what happens when two worlds link up. That was quite amazing. So I rest my case almost with that one. To show the actual bands of what I call pastel, Ion stripes, was pretty incredible that they show that in the TV show. How did that happen? Who put that in there? Right? So then when Cooper is figuring out the coordinates when he first comes back, and now he's going to go to Twin Peaks, he calls Gordon Cole, and he goes, the number is 253. That's 2 and 5 is 7, and 3 is 10. You've heard me do that 100,000 fucking times. He sounds exactly like me. He goes, 253, Gordon. That's 2 plus 5 is 7 plus 3 is 10. The number of completion. So that was pretty neat. And then the devilish icon of this bad something. No one knew what it was, but it was a logo that was lurking about. So when push comes to shove, Cooper gets in a place where the agent, Philip Jeffries, I think his name is, he's been turned into a kettle. He went too deep, and Judy turned him into a kettle. So when they show this 2 sevens and an angular thing, they bring them together. They become two triangles, sort of incomplete, and then it turns into 8. So it goes from 7 to 8, and that's one of the most consistent things I've been telling people for the last 25 years or more. The shift from 7 to 8, they show that right there in the inner chamber.
Mm. Wow.
7 becomes 8. Amazing.
But isn't...
What'd you say, Roxy?
The octet.
Octet.
Octet, yes, the octet. And it's the number for the Dobbs quadrant and the... moving into the 6 to the hexad. Yeah, but the goal is the octet, so they have. What?
On its side, Bob, is it not the infinity signal, the infinity symbol?
Yeah, that's what it is. Mobius strip, infinity, eternity.
Yeah.
But this angular threatening thing, which is made up of two sevens, becomes an eight. It flows together right in front of us. So then there's at some point, they're somewhere, and they go, it's slippery in here. So that's our slippage. Make it more between-world slippage. Then, at a key point at the beginning when certain things happen, after the eight, Mike, the one-armed guy, goes, electricity! You know, Captain Beefheart chant. He said it just like Beefheart. Electricity. Did anybody here see the show? No, none of you guys have seen it. Okay.
I read reviews.
Right, so the eight is a sign of electricity, maybe. Electricity is this ineffable, weird force, energy thing. So then they send Cooper back to the past to recorrect it. And they take him back to February 23rd, 1989. So let's listen to what was going on February 23rd, 1989, in Toronto on CKLN. For a minute.
<That's>
It shocked everybody that they went back and showed new footage of that movie, Fire Walk With Me, which came out in 1992. So those details are added to. And Laura comes back and she's in it. But if you look closely, as someone questioned, it doesn't look like the actress who plays Laura. So we'll have to see what more people say about that. But going back to February 22nd, oh, shit, I'm not on Skype. I got to get Bill. Well, Bill, wake up. It's panic button, Bill. Holy.
Poor Bill.
Oh, Leah goes, that was some good Frank Zappa. Damn right. Gene says, drums are insane. Okay,
yes,
so Bill, do my Skype for me, Bill. Let's see if he...
What?
Yeah, here it is. That's a sound in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm hooked up, Bill. Try it again. You shut up. Fuck you. Okay, so let's plug it in.
You got an echo, Bob.
I know, but I think Bill will control it. Now, let me find the... So, on February 22nd, going into the 23rd, now that's the date that Ian comes back, February 22nd, 2014, after a couple-year break, before he did a little bit with me on the six-day marathon. Then it took another few months before he came back. So we look at February 22nd, 1989. I haven't listened to this. I just want to see if there's any overlap of anything of interesting. Okay, even what song is played.
How is it related to 2014, February 22nd, 2014?
Yeah, Ion came back after the two-year break on February 22nd, 2014. He came back for 6 days or for a couple of those days in November 2013, but he came back and then was here for a couple of years again.
Yeah.
So this is 1989, so that's 25 years later? 1989, 2009, yeah, 25 years later, which is what Twin Peaks is all about, coming back 25 years later. So Ian comes back February 22nd, 23rd. Let's see if it goes. Now, this could be the end of the previous show, so I'm going to move it forward slightly. We don't need to wait for that transition to my show.
For 30 seconds, this is an audition. That's good. First impressions? Excellent work. Should we let it run a little? Is there any more surprises on it? Are you satisfied with the extent we've played? Would you like a little more played?
Oh, no. Well,
play another 30 seconds. This is an audition.
There's nothing else.
I'd have to.
Oh, we ended it.
Okay, take it away, Bob. Okay, Mike. We're here.
I haven't seen you for a few weeks. Do you want to talk a little bit about the music? And
yeah, well, since obviously, I'm going to be big in the 90s and a lot of money behind me, and I'll be making a lot of money. The creative subgenius in Toronto want to jump on the bandwagon, and they're all auditioning a theme song. So this is.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you.
Bob.
Ask what you
Bob can do for you. All right. This recent piece we just heard, did it include that? No, that was
a ghost.
Clairvoyance. All right. What we just heard was a piece by the Glacials. Obviously, they've listened to my show for years, and they know that the electric environment is a cold environment. So they picked a title and name for their group to match the theme of Bob. Under electric conditions, you'll catch a cold environment. So that was the Glacials' offering to Bob, and if it does well, if the response is not favorable, then Bob will use it. You know, the idea is to not match with our audience, but to probe them. So it doesn't necessarily have to be very popular to be picked in this ongoing contest to see what my theme will be. The one we've been using is the best one so far, but the person who made that wants to allow other people to attempt to knock him off the show. So that was the Glacius. Very nice piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, community radio at its best, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah.
That sort of thing happens.
That's what happens here at Bob's show, community show.
You didn't bring down any sort of audio supplementary material tonight. Is this, does it mean you have a lot to say, or is it...
Well, I have some tapes, but I'm not going to have you touch them with the pizza on your fingers, so we're going to have to hear Bob's files. No pizza on my tapes, okay?
Okay.
I'm getting a little suspicious of Kent, the way he enforced you to touch his pizza, therefore getting... this gook on the tapes, and I hope the Glacials don't mind. Now, the Glacials, we can't concentrate on you too much for a moment. I have to get some work done because we got a little delayed 2 weeks ago when Mike couldn't make it. And Kent doesn't evoke the proper file reading that Mike can do. I mean, Kent is excellent in what he does, but there are certain things that had to be done 2 weeks ago that didn't get done. So we have the Glacials here. And they are part of a group that was interviewed by us 2 weeks ago. All right? There was two members 2 weeks ago down. Now there's three more. Five in your
five
enterprise.
Five.
Yeah. Geez, more sticky stuff. Kent just gave Mike a chocolate bar, which will melt in his fingers. A Mars bar. Marshall bar. Okay, Mike, we've got to get some business done. First off, you didn't get to hear last week what I had to say about the CBC hit job on CKLN.
Right. Yeah, we were going to talk about that. And I was away last, well, 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And you said you were going to analyze the show, the segment on the show.
Yeah, and I did do it for Kent, but it was done well past 1 o'clock or something. And I don't think it got...
1:34 to 4.
Yeah, it got real late, and it didn't get on tape. So for the archives, we've got to do it in a speed-up version for those who've heard it before. What are you doing?
Oh, we're just
going to
smoke. So.
Oh, no, man. You can't smoke here. Oh, you can't even smoke out there. No one smokes around Bob. Bob is smoke. Bob, smoke me. Smell me, okay? Now sit down. You guys are nervous or something. You know, smoke break after 5 minutes with Bob. Now, you guys want to get your stuff auditioned? You can follow the game just a little longer, right?
Come on, let them smoke.
Yeah, no smoking.
Let them have a cigarette.
Bob's smoking tonight. Now listen, CBC. All right. They presented the whole thing. Did you see it? Yeah, you did see it. You saw it on your family's own machine, right?
Pressure.
All right. What happened is CBC basically created the theme that community radio stations, especially CKLN, have to tighten our belts, narrow our perspective, our skills, our talents, our options. And they ended off with a college student listening to a community station. All right. They had begun with him listening to it, turning it on. But at the end, when CBC's McGrath, what's that guy's name? McGrath? Paul McGrath? You know, a pink from the Toronto Star days? Told me once he was a fan of Zappa. You know, it can't be anymore the way he's acting on CBC. But he warned the Canadian national audience that the community stations have to get pink again. And the closing shot was the college student who had turned on the station at the beginning of the item, listening and then turning it off and turning his light off. The student, the college student, shut off the radio, shut off the community station. And that was the closing image. So, Paul, if I ever see you in Sam's again, you know what? Okay. So, now, during the show, obviously,
so what's the point, Paul?
Well, that was the overall theme. Turn off the electric environment, but turn off the subgenius environment, not the pink environment, you know. Turn the stations off. That was the overall hidden subliminal subtext of the piece. But inside it, you had Dave Menard, the program director for CKLN, obviously in a hostage position. He's sitting there with his arms folded, doesn't look too comfortable. And it looks like they are forcing him to do something that he doesn't want to do. It's not what he says. He says, okay, verbal line. He says the party line, everything's okay. He covers our side of it. But then they show him going through his index file, all right, with the names of staff of CKLN. And he's going through the section under M. And the camera zooms in on the M section, and you know he was just whizzing by the Bob Marshall private information on that card, that index card. So there was CBC making him telegraph Bob Marshall's private information across the nation, around the world, under satellite conditions, you know, in his office. And I think we were right, because when we heard about this show coming up, this item on the journal, we said, well, they're looking for Bob. And so the very fact that he was showing or looking through the card index at the M section for Marshall, my colleague, shows that they were trying to flash that image and information with their laser telescopes. They can pick up what's on that card index without being obvious. They can do it through their surveillance. Now, I have to hand it to Bernard, though, that he fooled them. He only gave them Bob Marshall's information, who has nothing to do with me anymore, right? Was the colleague, but the information on that card index does not apply to me, Bob Dobbs, right? So, I have to congratulate Bernard for fooling them. They held them hostage. They forced them to telegraph that information across the video screen, and he fooled them by putting Marshall's name out. All right?
What are some of your comments regarding the you know, the criticisms of the CRTC regarding, you know, quote-unquote balanced journalism? Is that possible to achieve, and can Bob provide some of that balance?
Yeah, Bob can. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to set myself up as a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to offer any alternative viewpoints to our alternative at CKLN that anybody at the station is pressured by the CRTC to present. In other words, we need some straight points from the center position, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. We need some violent opinions from the right, I'll do it. If you want some opinions from the left, I'll do it. In other words, I will provide the alternative point of view to whatever they think we're not accomplishing.
So you individually will provide that balance. It won't be necessary to go out and seek the zealots and the right-wing fanatics. You will be everything.
That's
at
right.
Once.
Yeah, I will be whatever we need to do. I mean, I don't know how often we have to present this balanced view, but if the executive wants to inform me what the topic is this week, we have to present the balanced view on, I'll do it. Because we know Bob has no point of view, so he can be any point of view, right? And he can make people believe he believes in the point of view he's expressing at the time. So as a scapegoat actor of the need for ecological presentation of viewpoints, Bob is the candidate for that position, if the executive wants it. All right?
I don't see how they can turn it down, quite frankly.
All right, so we got that covered.
Okay.
And Now, we get some items here. A lot of things have been happening the last couple of weeks, right? A lot of Bob's predictions are coming true. Media ecology has been taken over by the subgenii and the pinks. The pinks, though, are trying to enforce it through their backwards version, through censorship, going after somebody who writes a visual space medium. You know, you have the acoustic temple bureaucracy, right hemisphere boys hoiked up by the satellite environment, the Khomeinis, the mean combs, right? They are angry and take personal, more threatening than an atomic bomb or a cruise missile. They take more threatening, a book. Now, this shows Bob's point that we're past the end of the world, and it's the battle of the media now. The media are fighting the battle of Jericho.
Church Doc, hear that? Past the end of the world. The media are fighting it out now. Biblical prophecy there by Bob. Biblical metanoia.
The war on now, Earth is between the meme and the media.
That's right. That's what Roxy was saying, you know, that I was saying the president goes on regardless who is president. You can't stop the presidential institution. But what we're seeing here, things are starting to intensify. Later that year, November 89, the wall goes down. But I'm picking up on it already. I'm talking about, hey, things are happening. Boo, it's getting intense. So that's the beginning of the Twin Peaks show. Let's just see it a little bit more. Not too much more.
All right. So tribal archetypes are now inside of media archetypes. So you have the battle between the acoustic space of Khomeini versus the visual space of the West, right? And the West, not knowing Bob's knowledge, not knowing the effects of the electric environment on the right hemisphere person, right hemisphere tribe, are shocked at the intensity of the reaction of Khomeini, all right? They don't know how serious this is, that real war is in the media. In other words, the Khomeini and them have been listening to Bob's show. They said, that's right, we've got to go into media ecology. We've got to turn off the environment. But, of course, they love the electric environment for its acoustic effect, so they want to turn off the visual environment, the book. All right? We'll deal more with that if you want to, but I got to get on some other topics.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people are wondering why. Good point, Ken?
No, I just have the book. The satanic version.
You just bought it?
How about a week and a half ago?
So you were...
Before it was all the
brouhaha.
Oh, you're claiming you got in before it started.
You just, out of interest, personal interest, no media hype for you.
Yeah.
You got in there before. Okay, that's all right.
You're a dead man.
I know. Okay.
Well, listen, you tell him you got Bob.
Yeah,
tell him we'll turn off the electric environment and he'll be weak. He'll be mild-mannered under pre-electric conditions or post-electric conditions. All right, now, another interesting thing is, why is Rain Man, the movie, which critics say is okay but not real popular, not an excellent piece of work, why is Rain Man getting all these Oscar nominations and becoming maybe the movie of the year? Well, what's the hidden ground? Obviously, the movie meets a need in the audience that the directors, the creators of the movie, the distributors of it, the Wall Street connections to it, the pink connections to it, did not foresee. And what is Rain Man about? It's about an autistic savant. All right? It's an autistic person, someone you can't match with. Totally autonomous, creating its own fantasy world. Or
did you say an artistic savant?
Yeah, that's what Rain Man is. That Dustin Hoffman plays not an idiot savant, mm-hmm. an autistic savant.
Like I often think of you as an idiot savant sometimes, but an artistic savant is something I've never heard.
Well, that's what I am. See, you look at me as
a
rearview mirror.
An artistic savant.
Yeah, an artistic savant.
Not an autistic.
Not an autistic savant. But the reason Rain Man resonates with a chord in the audience, in the global theater public, is that Rain Man is about, and it's a summing up of the last 8 years of Reagan's regime. Rain Man is about Ronald Reagan. There's a pun there, Rain Man, Reagan. Many kids have said the name Reagan is by saying Rayman. It's the same. So Ronald Reagan, the Teflon president, was the perfect autistic savant as the acoustic space and tactile space icon. All right. He was a savant in a sense they call him the great communicator. The Pinks do anyways. Well, we subgeniuses know he couldn't communicate, but we also know that he wasn't supposed to communicate because making is the predominant form under tactile electric conditions, not matching. So we understood the appeal of Reagan's making ability. But the Pinks called him a great communicator, a savant, a wise man, wise tribal elder. Now, the autistic part is that nobody could connect to him. He denied everything that happened in his administration, right? Everything he thought he did had nothing to do with what happened, and everything that he said didn't happen did happen. So
he's conveniently forgotten a lot of things.
Well, not that he's forgotten, it never registered. It's an autistic. In the movie, Dustin Hoffman, at the closing scene, is that he's still in his own private citadel of consciousness space, and his younger brother, in the closing scene, doesn't connect with him. He sees that Hoffman has not connected really with him in the way that normal Pinks would like to be connected in.
I think we'll have to say that Bob in Twin Peaks is an autistic savant. It's something that humans can't connect with. I'm laying out the pattern. On that night.
I was thinking about the consistency of you talking about this.
400 years ago, thousands of years ago. Bob's still saying the same fucking thing. How can someone live with so few words and get energized by them for 40 years? I have 10 ideas. I say them over and over again, and I get so excited by them. I mean, that's verbal ecology, man. That's verbal fasting.
Yeah. You were talking about tribal archetypes earlier today. It's like 1989, and you're talking about tribal archetypes.
We're still doing it. When you guys go to the Akashic Records and check me out in 1959, you'll be hearing me say the same fucking shit. So good point there, Roxy. That's right. That doesn't change. Until Ion showed up, then Bob did change. Bob became unmanageable. He became excitable. He became a raving enthusiast.
Yeah, you were manageable before then? Before I had?
Yeah, reasonably, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
In the transition period after, you know, when I was in New York, in the St. Augustine walk around in the ruins of Rome, Bob walk around the ruins of the Android meme, I wasn't on the radio that much. I was in transition, getting ready for the next injection of 2009.
Sure.
They kept me on every now and then, but nothing like what I was doing in Toronto. So what did I do? I broadcast in Barnes & Noble's and book launchings. That's
live.
Where my radio show was. I was this homeless guy. This
live
guy way fringed
lab.
Out. Yeah, fringed out. I was Bob the Monster, showing up at every intellectual hobby, including the Phineas Wake Society, disturbing people. There was something very, I don't want to say edgy, but a little off-putting. Obviously, I knew something, but no one knew what the fuck he knew. Okay, so I'm just going to...
Bob, did you see the comments about Twin Peaks on chat? There's a few
no,
questions.
No, let's take a look at that. An artistic savant. I think I was saying Reagan was an autistic savant, and then I changed it to artistic. I was going back and forth, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Travel announced by the media, Trump. There's a scene with a yellow ball of yarn that Cooper picks up and then yawns. If you look closely, he mouths the word Bob as he yawns. Oh, that's a good one. I wonder where that is. Okay. I just want to highlight some other points. There's more we could play about that one. February 22nd, 2039. I have here Laura. They're all trying to decide what kind of dream it is. They think it's a dream, and they think it's someone, Cooper, Laura, dreaming, or someone else. They can't figure it out. But they're using the conventional mistake that a dream is something that happens when someone's asleep. And Ion points out that no one has ever slept. What we think is sleeping is going to another world. It's not a dream. It's an experience in another place. And so the basic premise of Twin Peaks on the dream idea, just like they got Phineas Wake all wrong, thinking it was a dream, is the big android meme red herring of Twin Peaks and David Lynch. They get you all screwed up about whether it's a dream or not. And the show is constantly showing you world traveling, portaling, but they don't call that a dream. So it's a very semantic trick. Laura's timeline has changed. We have that all the time here. Lots of timelines. Lucy now knows what cell phones are. Number 315, the hotel number, there's lots of Bob in that. 6 and 3 is 9. 3257. Every interesting number comes out of 315. The Julie Cruz song, I have here our video. Maybe it's something that we made, Roxy and I made. There's lots of sixes. And the one question here in Indom is, what year is it? What time is it? Bob was born in 1922, but then you find out he was born thousands of years ago. So what year is it? That is the main question you come out of Ion for the mind, is what year is it? Where are we? And then, now here is a really timely thing. On August 31st, the day my parents were married, on that anniversary, Roxy screamed her head off. We heard the story, I think, last week when they stole her, tried to steal her purse.
31st.
The 31st.
Yeah.
Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Well, and Roxy was amazed at her shriek. She didn't know where it came from. It was a bit beyond her personality or what she understood she would shriek about. Well, this goddamn fucking series ends on Roxy's shriek. And
no, I saw that mine was really much, much better. It was really like a monster, like, wah!
Yes. The point was, you know, that was on Thursday, and on Sunday, they echoed it xenocritically. They end the show with Roxy's shriek. Now, and that's so recent. I mean, she just shrieked on Thursday, and they're doing it on Sunday. That's pretty interesting. I mean, Roxy's never talked about her shriek. She never even had one. But she got one on my parents' anniversary, and she did it. And we talked about it on Saturday, and 24 hours later, they're fucking ending the series with it. Now, that's pretty good, eh? Pretty tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Roxy, so she's heard, she's checked it out, and she's, no, that's nothing compared to my shriek. And Laura did a very strong shriek. A lot of people got shocked by it. It was quite terrifying for viewers. But Laura, but Roxy thinks hers is even worse.
Yeah.
Let's see if anybody, look at that, support. That show was filmed 2 years ago. What the fuck are you talking about? It was not filmed 2 years. What time is it, buddy? What year is it? You don't even know what the basic question is. There's no 2 years ago. It was filmed. Well, we don't know where it is and what. You got to get that out of your head. The calendar don't work no more. Really. That show was filmed too. It hasn't been filmed yet. It's just as valid.
It
doesn't matter. It's when you experience it. You allowed it to be experienced, and it was worked on for 25 years. Filmed for 25 years, thought about, meditated, discussed, till the timing, and then we're here. So that's another lesson you get here. We don't ever fucking figure out what year it is. It's a stupid question. Doesn't get answered. Lynch should know that. Probably does. So,
Bob, there's a question down. Economic Trash asks, what is the significance of Bob's destruction at the hand of Freddy, who wears the one green glove?
Well, green is my color on the tiny note chart. So that's me killing the goddamn Twin Peaks series and David Lynch for fucking up with his ridiculous propaganda about mistaken ideas about dreaming. Okay, there's that one level. Freddy. Is there a Fred in Bob's life? No. There's never been a Fred in my life. So that's why they had to bring someone out of left field to, so I couldn't identify with it. So they bring Freddie over from London, who thinks he has a destiny. So Bob didn't die, though. He floats off, but he's not necessarily finished.
Mm-hmm. Bob, can you unmute Nick? Nick's
Oh, yeah, I see that. Yes, what's, how did that happen? And Gene, too. Well, you were just talking, Gene?
I called in on my phone. I'm on two lines.
Oh, okay. All right, Nick, did you want
to
say something?
I'm lining up to play more Revelations, if I can
right.
sneak in. There's another
Go
question
ahead.
Here.
Was All right.
Was Diane's appearance meant to be suggestive of the new Isis Cleopatra in the final episode?
No, no, no. Diane is Connie. Laura's Connie. Most of the women are Carolyn, just as most of the characters are me. There's only two people interacting, me and Connie, since 1995. That's when we were the first to reappear. So there's
Isis?
Lots of... Connie's Isis, yeah. Connie's anything you want. She does it. It's like I'm any male you want. Really.
Mm-hmm.
You can't limit me to one characteristic. So the Diane splitting... See, remember, This is Twin Peaks is Cooper, Lynch, taking our material and botching it. If you have to understand. He fucks it up. Like all the Android Mean does it all the time. It's a you just take any payday is more revelatory than any 18 hours of Twin Peaks and then the previous two seasons. You have to understand how it's based on Lynch refusing to fucking sit at my feet and learn a few fucking things. All art is people refusing to get hip with Bob. That's why
the bastards.
Yeah, the Croker Quadrant has Bob Dobbs as a name in the linking of characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the archetype of the artist. Croker, all these people want to be artists in the old sense. Create bad art in the long run. Not bad in the moment, but... in the long run, it has to be corrected by me.
But Bob, there were some significant snippets, and the one that I want you to go back to was that one where you said when you spoke with Iron and you had that holographic.